You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Crisis Call is a documentary film that explores what happens when people in the middle of a mental health crisis interact with the police and the criminal justice system. It begins with the story of a young man shot and killed by police after an altercation on a city bus in Toronto. The film raises disturbing questions about what happens when the boundaries between policing and mental health care disappear. For answers, the film's director looked to the police, psychiatric survivors, and to many others involved in crisis interventions. Laura Skye is the director of Crisis Call, and she joins me by phone. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Now, you spent the 2 years researching and creating this film. What was it that drew you to the issue?
Well, I had been working with the psychiatric survivor community on a previous film, Working Like Crazy, it was called. And in coming to know and, in fact, become friends with a number of people in that community, I realized how terrifying the prospect of getting into crisis and having to deal with the police was for many of the people who I spoke with. And then as I began to speak with the police, I realized that the fear factor was something that they experienced also. And it seemed that as we were slowly sliding towards really big changes in not so much in policy, but in practice, in terms of what happens to people when they get into crisis, I thought we need to be talking about this as a community, that this is a crisis. What's happening with people in mental health crisis and their fact that they are dealing more often with the police than with mental health workers, I think that's a crisis.
Now, the film takes as its starting point the shooting by a police officer of Edmund Yu in Toronto in 1997. What was the situation that led to his death?
Well, Edmund had been in and out of crisis for many years. And he had, at the time of his shooting, he was also homeless. He was just as afraid of going to hospital as he was as of dealing with the police. So he was a desperate person, but who in fact really captured the attention of many people in my community, because he was more than simply a person with a mental health issue. He was a committed Buddhist. He was very poetic. He was very much a part of his community. Then he got into a major altercation at a desperate moment. He slapped a woman at a bus stop, and the transit staff called the police. And he was isolated on the bus, and the situation on the bus escalated very quickly, and it escalated especially when one of the police officers, who was in her mind trying to help him, suggested that it was time to take him to hospital. And then everything really escalated, because hospital wasn't where he wanted to be. And one thing led to another, and he was shot. And it was a traumatic event, absolutely, unquestionably, for his family, but also for his community. And it was a traumatic event for the police officer who we have included in this film, Andrea Cowan.
So what was her response to these events that happened that led to his death?
Well, it was not only the events that led to his death, but it was the events following his death, because there was a very major inquest. It was one of the most effective inquests that we've ever had for a person who dies under these circumstances. The recommendations were very, very formidable. But she was on the stand for weeks, and it caused her to fundamentally reevaluate how she relates to people who are in crisis. And part of that was that she faced a crisis herself in her own experience of the trauma, which also, I think, drew her closer to some of the experiences of people who are themselves in a mental health crisis. It shifted her belief system, and it shifted her practice. So this most horrible of events, in the end, caused her to have a far more empathetic response, a thoughtful response to people who are in a psychiatric crisis. That was the irony.
Now, exploring these issues from a very different perspective, you also interviewed Sean Davis, a psychiatric survivor who was involved in forcing a bus off a highway in Ontario. Yeah. Now, can you tell us about that interview?
Well, Sean, I think, was 17 or 18 at the time. He had been on medication for hyperactivity, and he had a very he was very, very anxious, and he was on the bus, and the more anxious he became, the more medication he took. And of course, one of the adverse effects of the medication he was taking was that it could cause paranoia. And so here he was becoming more and more paranoid, taking more and more medication. And he asked, at a certain point in a small town in northern Ontario, he asked the police to take him off the bus and to take him to jail. He was really feeling that people on the bus were after him and they were going to hurt him or kill him. And the police refused. They thought that they had nothing, no facilities to offer him. So what they did is they put him back on the bus. And what I discovered, and putting him back on the bus, his crisis escalated, and at a very, very fearful moment, he asked the driver to let him off. The driver didn't. He tried to stop the bus, and in the process caused a terrible accident where an older woman eventually died, and Sean was charged, and in fact was found not guilty by reason of basically mental impairment. But the difficulty is that we discovered in our research something that is called, has come to be known as greyhound therapy, and that is in a number of remote communities or communities where there are no resources for people in mental health crisis. Professional people feel that the best thing to do is to basically send them to the next town down the road or next city where there may be services, but basically to get them out of town, because they can't help them there. And what happened to Sean, although having a very tragic result, greyhound therapy is not that unusual. It happens in places like Halifax. It happens in places like some small city centers in Alberta. It's not uncommon.
Both the incidents you've relayed to us seem to illustrate an enormous gulf of understanding between the psychiatric survivor and the people that they're dealing with. It's shocking to me, the level of that misunderstanding, or the gulf of understanding between them.
Well, there's a misunderstanding that really creates a terrible prejudice that's fed by fear, because every time there's a terrible event, the worst events get the most publicity. And so in our communities, discrimination against people with severe mental health issues is often really encased in fear. And what I learned in making this film is that psychiatric survivors and police have that fear in common. They're afraid of each other. But I think what is really horrendous to me is that there's a sort of a system, a neglectful system. Nobody ever said deliberately, we're not going to give people with mental health issues what they need. We're not going to provide services. We're not going to provide support. But we have policies of very acute neglect, housing, economic subsistence, jobs, that really cause people who are already struggling into severe crisis. And then when they get there, are they given the support they need? No, because 9 times out of 10, they end up dealing with the police. Sometimes their desperation causes them into criminal acts. Sometimes it's about stealing. Sometimes it's about stealing food. And our response to that is to put people in that situation in jail, where they're guaranteed not to get the help they need. So we've, in a way, institutionalized a lack of support for people who have very legitimate needs. And we've brought the full might of the state to do what, in fact, a healthcare system, a housing system, a disability system should be providing. And I don't think that the police want that to happen, and I don't think as a community we want this to happen. But we never got to decide it. It's simply happening. It's happening right now as we speak. I can guarantee you that in centers right across the country now, police are dealing with people in mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm. One of the people in the film, Stella Montour, an Aboriginal woman, speaks about the multi-layered prejudice and abuse she's faced. Do you find that her experiences reflect issues common to people who face these things? How's that?
Well, in two ways. First of all, the numbers of Aboriginal people in jails is staggering relative to their proportion in the rest of the population. But also, many of their acts of desperation have been fed by institutional and domestic abuse, by conditions of great despair in their communities. And our response to that despair is not a remedial one. It's not a supportive one. It's a neglectful one. And so that despair becomes desperation and sometimes, in fact, engenders acts that are unacceptable. And then they end up in jail where they get absolutely no support or help, or very little support or help. But her family experienced, her parents were in residential schools. They had terrible crises of parenting. And then Stella herself was abused in her community. And in fact, tried to play a major role. She became a mental health worker herself, working with youth. And as she got in touch with the damage that had been done in her community and in her family, she suffered severe mental health issues. And then when she was institutionalized, she was sexually assaulted in hospital, which is not uncommon. And when she disclosed, the police wouldn't help her because she was basically in quote-unquote a loony bin. So she was then neglected again. The staff minimized what happened to her. They joked with her about it. And that drove her further and further into terrible, terrible, distraught despair. And so she had three levels of discrimination, as an Aboriginal person, as a woman, and as a person with mental health issues. But she has become a real spokesperson. She has become a real... she's worked with this film. She's worked in her community to put the shame aside and to become an advocate. And she's just doing really important work.
It sounds extraordinarily valuable what she's contributing to it. Now, in the film, you also visited the Montreal Detention Centre psych unit, and you followed a police emergency task unit, mm-hmm. to like a SWAT team. What did you learn about the level of training and understanding police have around these issues?
Well, the literature and my experience showed me one very clear thing. If a police officer has had the experience of mental health issues in their families or among their close friends, they do a more sensitive, thoughtful, they have a more sensitive and thoughtful response to this part of their job. But ultimately, they're dealing with poverty, they're dealing with homelessness, and they're dealing with a population most people would rather just have not invisible. And the police haven't, that's a really, for somebody who cares about people who are struggling with mental health issues, they feel in a very impossible position because they feel that they're enacting policies that are horribly inadequate. So I learned that also the best teachers to other police officers in terms of caring about people who are in these issues are other police officers. That where the leadership needs to come from are sort of coach officers, frontline managers, and police officers who get it. They're the best people to teach young police officers, which you actually see happening in the film.
So what alternatives are there to armed police intervention in a mental health crisis?
Well, you know, the police officers don't refer to the sort of tools of their trade as non-lethal, because everything they use is potentially lethal. And what we'd like to see is we'd like to see services instead of weapons. We'd like to see just the basic necessities of life and care provided to people who are having such a rough time, rather than using the force of the police or the potential force of the police. And what I found that's very interesting is in this regard, the cops and the psychiatric survivors want the same thing. They want to be seeing a lot less of each other. That most of them want, in fact, better conditions for people who are struggling. And they want us as citizens to lobby, to advocate, to get involved and to say, you know what, this is a terrible way for us to be treating people who've been traumatized by their lives. That they deserve our support. And we have to start questioning whether this is the way we should be responding to their needs. Why are the cops being sent? Why aren't there other crisis services? Why aren't there a crisis housing system? Why isn't there a food crisis system? Why are we looking to the police to mend these torn structures of neglect? It's not what we want the police to be doing, and they don't want to be doing this either, and the survivors don't want them to be doing this. It doesn't solve the problem. It puts the problem behind bars.
The film's been screened in many different contexts, from training to community forums. How do you see the role of the film in catalyzing a response to the issues that it does raise?
Well, our goal was to bring all the players together, was to ask people who don't talk to each other to talk to each other, and to ask people who don't see themselves as allies to give it a try, to take a risk, to acknowledge a common problem. People with mental health issues are not getting the care they need. Police don't want to be playing this role. Survivors don't want cops to be playing this role. What could we be doing differently? So, for example, in Thunder Bay, we've just had a year-and-a-half-long project where all the players sat down at a table to try and devise alternative policies and alternative responses. The police were very active in this. Survivors were very active in this. And that's what we hope the film will do. Get people talking and planning different strategies and insisting on different policies.
Thanks very much for taking the time to talk with me this morning about this issue.
Well, thank you for wanting to talk about them.
That's great. I've been speaking with Laura Skye. She's the director of the film Crisis Call.